And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. And with me this morning are Father Peter Mangum, rector of the Cathedral of St. John Berkman's, along with archaeologist Jason Brown and our very own Dr. Cheryl White, an associate professor of history here at LSUS. And we're here to discuss an archaeological dig going on right now at the site of the original Cathedral of St. John Berkman's. And Father Peter, Jason, and Cheryl, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So let's get started with how and why did you decide to start this dig?
Well, we've actually long known the approximate location of the early church and school. And the whole thought came about to put a state marker near.
Okay.
And because we're proud of the history that we have, right. and all of a sudden it was like, well, you know what, we need to go in search and make sure that this is the right place, and it didn't take long for us to uncover one of the first of the foundational walls, and then excitement grew from there.
Now you're actually using a fire map from that era,
yes,
to like plot this out, and you're superimposing that, as I read, over a current map to kind of help you locate all of this.
Right. We were able to take the 1908 Sanborn fire insurance map from Shreveport and, using some software we have at the university, able to superimpose a current city map. And then by measuring from known landmarks that are on both maps, we were able to literally come within inches of the front steps.
Okay. And when the church was built, this was a temporary structure, was it not?
It sure was. It was built in the late 1902-1903, both the college and the church. And it was meant, we have the early journals of the original pastor, and it's great. I mean, he documents so many different things from the building of the church and the college, just to his daily routine and in fact, this was not the preferred site that they wanted to use another site, but because of the expense and everything related to building the church and the school, they moved to the secondary site and they built there. But it was built all along from the very beginning as two temporary structures. And so temporary ended up being about 25, 26 years until the church moved to its current location and what we now call Loyola. Originally St. John's, they moved there in 1938, and the church was moved in 1928.
Okay. And at the original time, was it a brick structure? Was it a wooden structure? What kind of a church was it? Was it a big cathedral or just kind of a small parish church?
Actually, I will say this. It was just a little, simple church. It was not yet a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just built as the second church of Shreveport. There now became so many Catholics that we had to move out of downtown and go south of town to what is now Texas Avenue.
But, I mean, the structure was a two-story wooden structure, so it wasn't meant to have the permanency that the current cathedral has now.
Although my church back home is a two-story wooden structure. Sunday school on the bottom floor and services up on the top floor.
Interestingly enough, that's the same way it was here,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
So the downstairs level would have been the parish hall, classrooms,
right.
Mm-hmm. And all, and
yeah.
Upstairs. You had to go the two flights up there to get there.
Yeah.
But it was, we can even see in the early photographs of how quickly it was deteriorating. So mm-hmm. I don't think it was at all built to really be there for decades upon decades.
Now, where did you find this diary? That's a fascinating, you know, part for me.
The diary of Father John O'Connor, who was the first Jesuit pastor here at St. John's, is actually in the archives of the Jesuits, which is held at Loyola University in New Orleans.
How far back do those archives go?
I don't know how far back the archives go. As far back as the Jesuits do in Louisiana, which I'm sure goes back to maybe even pre-colonial, or I should say colonial era, pre-statehood for sure.
Right.
So.
So I was wondering, you know, with the Spanish coming in as early as the early 1500s,
sure.
You know, whether there was any early missionary set up down there and whether they'd have the records of that.
Absolutely. The Jesuits were here very early on. The Franciscans as well.
Yeah.
In fact, in northern Louisiana, it was early 1700, 1717, when the Franciscans were first here, and the first celebration of the Eucharist, the Mass, and teaching of the people. So yes, the archives go back, and they contain all the information that they thought important to keep from the early 1900s.
I'm having a Name of the Rose moment. I want to go into the archives and find all the books.
That's right.
And you'd find a lot.
The dusty history buff in me wants to go in there. So how much of the building have you actually uncovered so far, and what do you believe is still under there that you're going to be able to dig up?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, the biggest part of archaeology is the history and the research. Right. I mean, that's really where the rubber meets the road. Dr. Watt has done a great job of doing that research. Locating the site, locating a rough area where we think it was, we started doing some digging to try to find some type of archaeological or support for that. And that was done. As a matter of fact, I was very impressed with Dr. White and Marty Loschen and their ability to pinpoint the location as accurately as they did. So my job coming on the project is kind of easy. Dr. White's done so much of the research with Father Peter that I just go in and pretty much dig and look for the location. And we've uncovered, I'd say, probably about 10 to 20% of the site. It's a lot more to be done. It's a fairly large building. But as far as the digging, not much has been done just yet. But we have located certain key elements of the structure.
So for the audience member, you're the guy in the movie with the sieve and the brush, the little paintbrush.
sort of. As much as I want to be the Indiana Jones with the hat and the whip, I am the guy with the Marshalltown trowel and the brush in the bottom of the pit.
Because for most of us, that's all we ever know of archaeology. We don't understand the painstaking work once you find an artifact that goes into identifying that and the rest of the work that goes into it.
There's a lot more that goes into it. And unfortunately for this site, I mean, this is a location in Shreveport that has undergone many disturbances over the years. So this building, the structure, would have been built in 1902, 1903, as Father Peter had pointed out. And then when it was raised to the ground, it was demolished. And after that, it would have had other structures. It had parking lots. It had car lots on top of it. Then there were disturbances when I-20 was built. And so they would have come in with bulldozers and crews and unearthed everything at that time to build the highway. It was further disturbed when I-49 came to Shreveport and intersected right there at I-20. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the site has had a lot of disturbances. So it's hard to get a true impression that you would get for something more historic, something that might be pre-Columbian.
Right.
This is historic archaeology, and it's changing more.
So the opportunity maybe to find other artifacts other than building structure artifacts are not necessarily gone, but limited because of all of those disturbances over the years.
It's going to have an appreciable impact on what we do find, and that's why we're finding things that are mixed in. We find objects that are clearly more modern objects that might be mixed in with something in a more historical context.
Right. Lug nut, you know, mixed in, which you probably wouldn't have, you know, 1903. So, although cars were coming around at that time. So, what else do you hope to uncover? Is it mostly just the building structure? Or are you hoping to actually find other artifacts, personal artifacts or anything like that, or church artifacts from that era?
I think that there is some expectation that we might find certain artifacts, personal artifacts around the structure of the building, possibly in the interior. Hopefully we might get lucky that some of those disturbances would have left some things intact or there. And I think initially, you know, we were trying to just uncover the footprint of the building, just to have an idea that where the building was located. And now through the excitement, it's been pretty exciting and thrilling for people who have come down there to we've uncovered more and to look around. But we've only just begun to do more of a collection of what's there, as opposed to locating the structure itself.
And this also had a college attached to it, did it not?
It did. Right.
Was that a Jesuit college for the ministry, or was that just kind of a general college at the time for educational purposes of the general public?
In the early 1900s, the word college would be basically just a school, a high school.
Right.
So nothing along the lines of a college or a university today. But in the early 1900s, they were educating basically the young youth, male youth, the Jesuit ministry. Especially early on, was geared towards that particular age group, and it itself was a three-story building, very close to the location of the church. And in fact, it was built first. And that was a very common thing to do. And we've even seen that in modern history, even here in Shreveport, where first the school is built and then it is followed by the church.
How long do you think this is going to take? I mean, is this a 10-year project, 5-year? You just don't know?
It depends on how far the community and the church wishes to go with it. At the easiest level, it's just uncovering the cornerstones, uncovering the area, the perimeter of the church can be done quite easily. But doing more of a surface collection, locating the college and doing more excavations near the college would be fruitful. But that will be determined by the community and by the church itself.
And is this property owned by anybody right now, or is it literally kind of abandoned property?
No, it's owned by a family here in town that purchased it right after the Jesuits moved from that site to the current location.
Okay. And they've, over the years, have put the car lot and the other things on it, or how did that come
right
about?
Yeah. Well, one of the good things about the car lot, though, is that when it was placed, even before I-20 and I-49 came, the car lot actually sealed a lot of the
right
things down underneath.
Yeah,
so,
the blacktop, which is, you know,
the asphalt itself. The community has shown unbelievable interest, I must say. We have a Facebook page at the cathedral, and I would hope that many people would choose to go and look at it and see the video and the pictures that are found there. For example, the first of the three videos that I put up there, it already reached more than 41,000 people.
Wow.
Right, and the current video that shows even more so the excavation and some of the artifacts that we have found is already over 30,000, and I mean, it's still on a trajectory to beat the 41,000, and with over 21,000 people actually viewing the video itself. So I must admit, I'm quite astounded at the interest of the people here. I've had any number of people come up to me and just say, that's wonderful, you know, and what we're doing, uncovering history, a lot about the Shreveport history itself. And I don't know if there's partially a fascination of seeing a Catholic priest dressed as a Catholic priest in the trenches, literally, there digging. And but it's something that is of interest to me, history, tradition, obviously. This is my second archaeological dig, if I could say this. I was able to do a dig in the Holy Land. So it is something of interest. I thought it would be a very limited interest, but we've had so many people of the city following us and showing their interest in this project.
So where do you go now from here, Cheryl? Are you digging into archives further to find out further information about this church? And what is your role in all of this?
I'd love to. Having the diary of Father O'Connor has been very helpful in terms of setting the scene between about 1902 and 1905, so that we have some idea about what early life, early parish life was like for the people of that little community. Not a lot of detail in there about the construction itself, but a lot of information about the interior of the church, mm-hmm. gifts that were given to the church, and basic daily life. For instance, one of the things we were sort of puzzled about in the beginning was that we kept finding all of these oyster shells in the dig. And although we know, I think Jason can speak to this probably, we know that downtown that's not an uncommon find when you dig up streets, for instance. They were used, I guess, for some sort of paving support. But there's an indication in the diary that this was also something that the Ladies' Altar Society did regularly for the pastors, was they brought them oysters. Yeah. So that kind of filled in a little blank for us there.
Back at that time, hauling oysters up from the Gulf was, I mean, that had to be a day trip.
And they were very large oysters, too. Yeah. So before there was much over-farming done. So.
Right. So.
And Cheryl just mentioned that there are a number of items inside the church that are very well documented. What I love about it is that many of those very items are still used in the current church.
So now you have a deeper history of those
items. Absolutely. It is really, really fascinating to see and to know that these came from someplace in Europe, or this family donated it, from paintings that we have in the current cathedral to the holy water fonts made of marble that were donated by certain families and now and still in use over 100 years later.
So had that history kind of been lost there for a while until you found this diary, or was there just sort of a little bit of a cursory history around it?
Well, we certainly have a cursory history of Catholicism in North Louisiana. But all the specifics we had lost. Yeah. So it's just so great to uncover it and realize that it goes back literally to the beginning of our parish.
Yeah. So that's got to be fascinating for you.
Well, it is. And there's also, of course, these great little social history commentaries that you get in the process of this right. that are completely unexpected surprises. Things like putting in the electricity in the church in 1908. Mm-hmm. They have to make the comment that this is, you know, a great modern marvel of electricity. And a note that, interestingly, Jason may be able to speak to this too, because of something we found at the site the other day, Father O'Connor makes a comment about having acquired Mr. Ford's magnificent machine, which will do 12 miles an hour.
Ooh.
And Jason, you want to hint about that a little bit, maybe?
Well, I think it's a fascinating reference to the Model T.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we'll find any evidence of that archaeologically, but certainly that would have been a very relevant modern technology that would have been arriving in Shreveport at the time.
Well, I said that because I know Jason has a real interest in those old automobiles.
Oh, okay. That might be the lug nut you find then. You might actually find a lug
Could
nut.
Could be.
Maybe he'll find the garage where he parked it at. So
that would be fabulous to find parts of Model T.
Yeah.
But there are other references to things like a meningitis outbreak in Shreveport right. that happened around 1908, 1909. Lots of things about the community in general. I mean, very vague references. It might not interest anyone other than a social historian. But a great commentary about what life in Shreveport was like at the turn of the 20th century.
You have to wonder what might also be held in family Bibles out there from parishioners
sure.
that have been passed down and perhaps neglected.
We'd love for them to call.
So, you know, just to call out, if you have one of those old books and maybe it was given to you by your grandparents, your great-grandparents, and it's been passed, and you've never opened it up, you might be surprised of the world of joy that you could get from just opening that book up and looking at your own history as well as the history of the parish.
And a number of photographs, I'm sure, that people have not really realizing in which church had this been taken mm-hmm. that our great-grandparents got married or whatever. So if anyone has any desire for us to help them identify it, we would do it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I'd like to stress how important that is because when you're looking to find this structure, this building, it helps to have a photograph of the building as it's situated. We don't have that many. When you're looking to find out or explain why there were so many oysters forming like a substrate in this structure or on the site, it's reading Father O'Connor's diary and having that wonderful explanation. Right. This is history coming alive. It's a pulling together not just of the written word and the photographic evidence that we have, but the archaeological evidence that ties it all together.
Be a great little history project for the high schools around here to have their high school kids
go find all
of those old family Bibles and bring them into the light and maybe
Absolutely.
Get them to the experts who can then peruse through them and glean out and hone out the information. So that would be my retirement gig. You know, that would love that. So in the meantime, I got to eat. So any final thoughts you guys want to share about this project and your hopes for it?
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, as a historian, it's really gratifying to see the community response because, you know, I think that sometimes we lose the perspective that this is, in fact, interesting to people and meaningful to people. And, you know, I would just encourage people to think about it from the perspective that this really sort of enlarges our experience, our collective experience of being alive, when you can see things in a broader context and something that's larger than you are. And so that, for me, has been extremely gratifying, and I'm so grateful that this is all happening in Shreveport.
And, of course, as we're looking to our past, we can also take a moment to look to the future and realize that that Shreveport as it is now, 100 years from now, will be different, no doubt about it. And we need to always be very appreciative of our history and where we are today and not take any of it for granted as it's pointing us into the future. I'm still looking forward to finding some more artifacts. But we found some simple things from nails to a nice coin, to tile, to the chimney, to a medal that might be a religious medal or not. We don't know for sure. And a few other items. And actually a number of bottles, from the little medicine bottles to a couple of alcohol, liquor bottles that were from the early 1900s. I'm sure we'll be finding out a lot more in the near future. And we might even make a call to the public with regards to coming out and helping us sift. Right now is not the right time because we have the heavy machinery out there and it's still private property. But there will be a point in which we are hoping to have people, maybe the high schoolers that you mentioned or some of the college-age kids, come out. As we're going to sift through so much of the dirt.
Forget an Easter egg hunt. This is way more exciting.
I love it.
Far more exciting.
All right. Well, Father Peter, Cheryl, and Jason, I want to thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you for having us.
That was Father Peter Mangum, rector of the Cathedral of St. John Berkman, along with archaeologist Jason Brown and our very own Dr. Cheryl White, associate professor of history here at LSUS. They join me to discuss an archaeological dig going on now for the original site of the very first and only Cathedral of St. John Berkman's. If you'd like more information about this project, you can call 318-221-5296. That's the church number. Or on Facebook, they have some fascinating videos and photos. Just Google on Facebook or search on Facebook, Cathedral of St. John Berkman's. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.